Do we have 6 members of the committee in the platform? Alan, Teboho. Check 1 2. Hello.
Morning, Chair.
Morning, Chair. Yes, Commissioner. I am John Deputy Minister.
If you give me, Jerry.
No, I check a team. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with the sound. Alan, Teboho.
Okay.
Morning, DM.
Hi, Commissioner, how are you?
Okay, man, how are you doing?
No,
thanks for joining us.
I've been well.
Okay. Honorable Vessels is here. Honorable Shivambu.
Good morning, Chair. It's Alan here. Teboho is running this morning's meeting. But for now, there's only 4 members, yourself, Sarupan, Mr. Shivambu, and Mr. Vessels.
And Dion George.
Oh, yes, he just joined, so it's 5 now, Chair.
So, we're running short of 1. Let me see. Let me try to call the whips and see if they can join now. Okay, I think Honorable Mark Villetta is here. We know, correct. Let's start. Good morning, everyone who is in the platform. The meeting is officially opened. Let me welcome members of the Standing Committee Finance. Welcome, Deputy Minister Dr. Masondo. Welcome, SARS Commissioner, Mr. Kesweta, and the entire team from by the way, you are also a doctor, Commissioner. I see also on the profile of your picture, Dr. Kesweta. Welcome the team from Treasury, also welcome the SCOF support team, PBO director, and the team from PBO Communications, Legal Services, and other members, I mean officials from Parliament. Roll call and apologies, Alan and Teboho.
We haven't received any apologies yet.
Okay. Thanks very much. I'm not sure if the DG is in the platform, even if it's not here. Honorable members, last time when we were conducting the oversight visit, we heard that the DG and the family of Moajana lost their son. We conveyed a message of condolence. Be that as it may, let's also inform others who might not have been aware that our colleague, the DG, Mr. Dondo Mwajana, has lost his lovely son. May the soul of the son be, rest in peace, and condolences to the Mwajana family, colleagues, and friends of the family. thanks. Then let's move to three. Deputy Minister, then I will call the Commissioner. Over to you, Deputy Minister.
No, Kenza, much Tulu, or Committee to Mali. Honorable Joma Sangani. Honorable members, thank you for the opportunity to brief you on SARS plans for 2022-2023 financial year. Honorable members, would you also allow me to acknowledge the presence of the Commissioner Kisweta, with together with his executive team. They've joined me today, as usual, to present the APP and later help me answer any questions that you may have. I know that time is limited, and I'm sure you are eager to engage on this subject, so I'll keep my remarks very brief. It is 25 years since SARS was established, since the dawn of our political democracy. And since its formation in 1997, SARS has been one of the shining lights of our democratic institutions, presiding over the tax system, customs services, and diligently enforcing the relevant legislation fairly and responsibly. Honorable members, a well-functioning revenue services is key to our democratic and developmental goal of creating a better life for all. In the 2022 State of the Nation address, President Cyril Ramaphosa aptly summarized the importance of SARS when he said that over 25 years of its existence, SARS collected more than 17 trillion, which contributed towards the improving of lives of South Africans through the provision of healthcare, education, social grants, and other basic services, including support of the economy. Because without this 17 trillion, government will not have been able to provide these services, including supporting the economy. It is almost 2 years since COVID pandemic has been disrupting lives, jobs, cultures, that is the way we do things, as well as the economy. Notwithstanding lives lost, jobs lost, GDP growth lost since COVID, we continue to do our best to ward off the worst impact of COVID-19 pandemic. Accordingly, SARS has once again performed very well by collecting more revenue than expected. Admittedly, the improved revenue collection was also helped by the unexpected recovery in certain sectors in our economy, especially mining. But I must say that without a capable SARS under the leadership of the Commissioner, it would have been very difficult, if not impossible, to collect this revenue. Without an efficient and trustworthy revenue services, one that inspires confidence in taxpayers, we might have squandered the opportunity and failed to collect this revenue. I would like to commend the SARS Commissioner and his team for continuing to execute the SARS mandate in these trying times. The administrative enhancement, modernization of the SARS system, Office Vision 24 are indeed bearing fruits. The adoption of latest digital technologies like artificial intelligence, machine learning, are signs of an institution in touch with the demands of the modern economy operating in a complex and uncertain environment. I share the Commissioner's concern, though, that taxpayers' compliance levels are unacceptably low. Illicit activities, tax crime remain a huge challenge, and this erodes tax morality and undermines the work of government as well as SARS. There have been gradual improvements, however, in the overall compliance levels, together with the strategic policy enhancements aimed at broadening the tax base and easing the tax burden on South Africans. I'm certain, honorable members, that SARS will continue to perform well. The SARS team has our full support as the ministry as they pursue their strategic objectives and SARS annual performance plan, which they will outline later. Honorable members, we should recognize that SARS executes its mandate under very tight and fiscal conditions. As set out in the fiscal framework we presented in February, our economy is not growing fast enough to match the demands of our growing economy, of our growing population. The 2021 July unrest and the recent floods in KwaZulu-Natal, parts of the Eastern Cape and Northwest will further undermine our economic recovery. The conflict between Russia and Ukraine also presents an emerging risk. COVID-19 pandemic remains a threat to the economic activities as well as our recovery. Having to work under these tough conditions, it is more reasons that we must, all of us, support continuing efforts by the Commissioner and his team to rebuild SARS. Thank you, honorable members and everyone, the media, the public on this platform, for your attention. I will now hand over to the Commissioner to present the SARS annual performance plan for fiscal year 2022-2023. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'll now hand over to the Commissioner to take us through the plan. Thank you.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. And once again, Honorable Chair and Members, thank you for the opportunity that we have this morning to share with you the broader context of SARS and specifically to share our annual performance plan for the year that commenced on the 1st of April. We today are joined, thankfully and happily, by my colleagues of the executive and a few of our own staff members who will make various contributions throughout the presentation. Allow me, Chair and members, to share my screen and take you quickly through a set of slides that we have prepared. And if I can just confirm, Chair, that these slides are visible. So I want to start by just briefly in morning we will zoom out and give institutional tips as well as the of the 20 to 2025 financial years. I want to share some of our must-win battles without which we cannot deliver the mandate of SARS effectively and efficiently. And then, Chair, in tabling our plan, I would like to recap our strategic priorities for the five-year period and then share some performance highlights. Understandably, this is not the tabling of our performance results of last year, but I think just sharing quick highlights will give context for the year that we are currently in. And then I will zoom in to the specific deliverables of our plan for this year. At this stage, some of my colleagues will also share examples of the specific activities that will deliver these objectives and produce the results. And then I will wrap up by sharing with the members what winning means for SARS, and also then some concluding remarks before we open for discussion. So just focusing on the institutional context, this slide is in your pack. It's not meant to necessarily read on the screen, but it gives a just a sense of the highlights of the journey of 25 years of SARS since its inception in 1997. We will later this year appropriately mark this momentous occasion in the life of SARS, but also in the life of our democracy. But I want to just zoom in on one or two points, Chair. Firstly, to say that during this year, as the Deputy Minister had alluded to, SARS had collected annual revenue growth of almost 18 trillion. But what is remarkable is that that growth has, on a compound annual basis, been at almost 10%. So you can see from a humble 147 million of revenue collected in 1996-97, we have, in the year that has just concluded, delivered more than tenfold of that, and also the first time that SARS had collected net revenue of north of 1.5 trillion rand. You see that in the context of economic growth. You can see consistently the blue bars representing the nominal economic growth and the line graph referring to the growth of revenue in that particular year. We also see in 2008, when we suffered the financial crisis, you can see that SARS is directly, the economy of South Africa and therefore the performance of SARS is directly linked to the health of the global and the South African economy. We also see that period post 2015, when the capture of SARS started, and for the first time, we also had a point where the buoyancy was either at or lower than the growth in the economy. And then we see the COVID impact, where we had contracted both the economy and revenue collection, and then the year of recovery. What is really remarkable and noteworthy is that not only have we had a year-on-year growth of 25%, but we've also grown by more than 15% against the pre-COVID year. This is what tax specialists would refer to as the tax buoyancy. This is the differential growth between the nominal economy and the growth in tax revenue. And you can see those two points on the 25 years being the financial crisis and the capture of SARS that have dipped below a perfect correlation. And then steadily, we are growing at a rate faster than the economy. And that's only true because of the focus on our compliance program. So we remind ourselves, SARS, that honorable members, that SARS is created in law and has a specific act that defines and prescribes the work of SARS. SARS as an organization has the obligation to build an effective revenue administration system. So SARS is both an administrator of law, but it is also a complex operation. And it is that complex operation that administers the acts that are inscribed in law. Our mandate simply is to collect revenues to ensure that compliance with tax and customs legislation improves and to facilitate legitimate trade in order to enhance the integrity of our domestic economy. But we have also stood back and asked ourselves the question, why do we exist? Not only what it is that we do. And there we are very clear that it is the work of SARS that enables government to build a capable state that fosters economic growth and social development. And ultimately, our higher purpose is to serve the well-being of all South Africans. We inspired ourselves and our employees with a vision of what we can be in the future. And this is a journey to work towards a smart, modern SARS with unquestioned integrity, trusted and admired. And this will never end because the world is changing even faster than ever before in disruptive and exponential ways. So the modernization of SARS is not a project, but a process. We are clear that our compliance theory is underpinned by a notion that most taxpayers are in fact honest, and we must help them fulfill those obligations with minimum cost and effort. Our compliance model, which we have often inversed, is that it is our job to assist those who are willing and want to comply, to assist them, to make it easy, to provide assistance, and ultimately work towards those who willfully and consciously choose not to comply, to enforce the full extent of the law. It is this diagrammatic concept that informs the work that we do. But we also are mindful that we will never build a SARS big enough to enforce all of our laws. So it is about building a system that is really premised on voluntary compliance. In other words, a virtuous system where every taxpayer feels the moral obligation, but also is enabled to fulfill the obligation voluntarily. In support of that intent, we have shared with you before, and I'm just refreshing that, the 9 strategic objectives that then informs the programs, the initiatives, and the work that we do. I will not go through these now, but we'll refer to them again when we table our APP. But Chair, before I get into more details, it is very clear to us that unless we win in the following areas, then no effort will bring about the capability of SARS to fulfill its mandate effectively and efficiently. We have to broaden the tax base. Not every taxpayer that ought to be registered is registered. We have to improve tax morality, and we do so by instituting a system of voluntary compliance, but also raising awareness of fiscal responsibility of every citizen. We have to use the limited resources very smartly, very intelligently, so that we accept that we have to do more with less. We are not on our own, so building crucial partnerships within government, but broadly stakeholders, locally and internationally, improves the entire ecosystem. And if we want to earn the public trust, we have to act in a manner which is beyond reproach. We have to act with integrity so that we can be trusted and admired. And we hold these very dear. Each of the following slides gives the committee members a sense of what the work is. And I will pick on one or two of these areas just to make the point. The first four, honorable members, is work that we can do within SARS. Developing a single view, for example, modernizing our systems continuously. We live in a world where human effort has to be augmented by artificial intelligence, and so data science and technology enablement is central to synthesize with the people contribution of our organization. It is effect building an intelligent organization, and we have to remain knowledgeable and we derive these insights from engagement with society, but also from data and evidence. The next four really is to enjoin the support of the committee that without the support of the rest of government, we will not be successful in growing the tax base. I want to go through each of these very quickly. Firstly, we have too many registration identities. We have, if I am a taxpayer as Edward Kiswetter, I have a ID number. If I have a VAT registration, I have a VAT number. I have a personal income tax number. If I have a company, I have a company registration. So it is difficult to find a unique identification of any entity. As a whole of government, we should set that as an aspiration. Secondly, we have too many registers that are disconnected and are talking about it to each other, where the same individual may appear differently in each of these registers. Imagine if we could have a consolidation naturally demarcated in terms of the legal mandate that we have, but allowing every entity of government access to the same raw data that describes every individual, every entity that ought to be in our society and registered for tax. We have to have better instrumentation of economic activities across our value chain, and we have to enhance cooperation with our partners internationally, on whom we also rely, for example, for data information, financial information of companies and individuals who have financial assets, financial transactions, and other activities abroad. And these we cannot do on our own, and we call on the members of the SCOF to support us in this endeavor. This is also an area where SARS will do its work to educate and to make it easy and to detect non-compliance, to provide world-class service. But here again, ultimately, tax morality is also a function of society's confidence in the whole of government. And again, we would seek support from the committee to make this clarion call to all of our departments in government, all entities. They inadvertently support or detract from tax morality and ultimately compliance. This slide just simply says we have to be smarter. The Deputy Minister also spoke about building an intelligent, modern, future-proofed organization. That is indeed the journey that we are on. We cannot, in receiving and processing almost 20 million declarations with even tens of millions more supporting documentation, you can imagine that we live in an era where we cannot process all of that information manually. We cannot assess and apply our minds to every one of these instances individually. And so automating, leaning on machine learning and artificial intelligence, deriving insights from data is increasingly where we are going in terms of the modernization of SARS. We also have to step up in customs to achieve the same level of modernization. And also provide our taxpayers with data clarity and certainty. We are a member in an ecosystem, and so relationships is very important. We have worked hard in the last 3 years to reestablish and to improve the relationships with our sister agencies in government, in both the economic, the justice and social and other clusters. We work with local institutions, representing various, intermediating various relationships. The media is an important partner both to hold us to account, but also to help us work towards tax morality. And then, of course, we also have partnerships around the world because we are a member of an international community. A tax risk anywhere is a tax risk everywhere. And then ultimately, we have to build a trusted and admired organization. And this is a function of the quality of our leadership, the professional and competence of the work we do, and the trust ultimately that society have in us. So, Chair, I thought that just a useful reminder of the context where we find ourselves in, and in tabling the APP for this year, I'd like to share briefly, firstly, our performance highlights, secondly, recap the five-year plan, and then table specifically the one-year plan. We have just delivered, so it's fresh in everyone's mind, the 1.56 trillion that we have collected, which is a 25% growth on prior year. The refunds of over 320 billion is the highest that we have ever paid out. And we are proud to, when we acknowledge that that is money that goes back into the economy and often into the hands of people who are financially strained, and who welcome the refunds that are due to them. Naturally, we have to balance that with the risk to the fiscus, and we will talk about that later. We have also a strong focus on managing a compliance program. My colleague Johnston will share with you very briefly what are the activities or examples of the activities that produces the 210 billion of compliance revenue, and then facilitated trade totaling over 3.3 trillion across our ports of entry, which is also a significant growth on the previous year. So let me hand over to Johnston very quickly to talk through how the compliance revenue, specifically the 210 billion, is achieved.
Thank you, Commissioner, and good morning to the Chairperson and the Honourable Members. I will speak briefly on the 210 billion that comes from the administrative actions that we have taken as SARS. I think it's important to see that 210 billion in the context of what we call our revenue management system, which is constituted by three dimensions, which is the economy and revenue that we harvest from tax policy and tax proposals. You'll recall that those in the year that we are reporting on were neutral from a revenue point of view. And the third dimension is what I'm going to just unpack now in terms of the administrative actions that we take as SARS. Just by way of example, under the theme of work general compliance interventions, we have been able to process around 3.6 million cases, which allowed us to claw back revenue of 67.2 billion rand from debt that was due to the fiscus. Is an area that we'll continue to focus on going forward. A further example relates to outstanding returns. Outstanding returns reflect a degree of non-compliance, and we've been able to collect 3 million of these outstanding returns in the year 21-22, which gave us 3 billion rand. So we are confident that as we continue to pursue our must-win battles that the Commissioner alluded to earlier, that outstanding returns become another area that we'll look into. Briefly, before I step off the slide, our voluntary disclosure program, which is one of the key vehicles we use to get into voluntary compliance with our strategic intent, yielded in excess of 3 billion rand, and we will continue to pursue this particular program to yield revenue for the fiscus. Sadly, we've had to detect and stop some impermissible refunds to the tune of 61 billion rands. We continue to be quite vigilant using our algorithms in as far as ensuring that all the refunds that we pay are legitimate and due to the taxpayers, as indicated by the Commissioner, 321 billion of legitimate refunds would have been paid. If you look further in terms of looking into under tax and customs audits and investigations yielding this 210 billion, just pick one. We've seen a significant response around transfer pricing and international taxes, where 345 cases were completed and yielded around 12 billion rands. And this in particular had about 11 cases that related to transfer pricing and 45 cases where we were able to reverse assess losses to the tune of 1 billion rands. And this work continues to take focus even in the new year as we deepen and intensify our focus. In the last
segment, which is investigations into syndicated tax and customs crime. Chair, we are encouraged by some wins we've seen in this regard, where in syndicated crime, we've seen about 46 projects comprising of about 557 active investigations that we focus on the illicit economy, and we estimated this value of around 42 billion rands, and we're able to recover revenue of about 7.7 billion rands. And we are encouraged by this outcome, and we believe that as we continue to focus on this theme of work, we will continue to deliver results in our compliance program. Chair, I'll stop here and hand back to the Commissioner to take us through the recap of the strategic plan 2020 to 2025. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Johnston. And just for the honourable members again, Johnston Makhubu is our Chief Revenue Officer. As I said, Chair, that's just a highlight. We will more comprehensively work through our annual report when we come back to Parliament in a quarter, but the members are most welcome during the question and answer session to go back and ask any specific question about our performance last year. To recap then, members, the strategic plan, the five-year period, focuses on delivering of the three legal mandates that SARS has, being the collecting the revenue that is due, normally expressed as the printed estimate that the minister sets for us and have the opportunity to revise twice during the year in October and February, managing the overall compliance, which is a function of tax morality, but also the work of SARS to follow up every obligation, and then enhanced facilitation. This particular graph gives you our key indicator that will be the measurable evidence that we have exercised and fulfilled our mandate, or the degree to which we have executed it, what the baseline was in the for the planning period, and what we hope to achieve over the 5 years that this administration is focusing on. The annual performance plan for this year, therefore, before I share with you the specific plans, I just want to refresh the situation analysis, and this may be slightly more updated than what would have been in the printed material that you received, because our situation changes all the time and we have to be alive and agile in our response to it. But key to that from external perspective, we have to acknowledge that the economy, even though we have seen some recovery, we see in the medium term period that that recovery is still very subdued, certainly not underpinning the kind of growth that we need to fund government programs to create the kind of jobs and businesses that a thriving and healthy economy needs to support the well-being of our people. Government debt is high, but stabilizing due to improved revenue performance, but also the wisdom of the Minister of Finance and National Treasury colleagues to not take all of the money and spend it, but to use some of the overperformance in revenue towards paying off debt. That reduces our debt service cost and in turn makes more money available for programs. That is supported by the ratings agencies that have applauded that action and expressed confidence in the rebuilding program of SARS. Public confidence, we know, is still a challenge in South Africa. The recent release of reports that affect government and society does not augur well for a growing public confidence, but we have a long way to go. The past period in our democracy has also created the opportunity for criminals to progress and to consider it justifiable to defraud the system. And so the illicit economy remains a huge challenge for a revenue administrator. We also have to be mindful that the world around us is changing, business models are changing, operating models for organizations such as us have to keep step with that. Globally, there is a stream of work with the G20 and the OECD in terms of how do we respond to the digitalization of economies, and within our own modernization program, how do we remain relevant to use the best of emerging technologies and optimize our ecosystem. The political environment remains challenging. This is not only a South African phenomena. I think globally and domestically, this remains a challenge. The world becoming increasingly more bipolar, democracies being under threat, and the current conflict in Europe also not helping us. And that, in fact, will have a huge negative impact on inflation, on economy, economic recovery, but also begin to impact on the livelihood of people, and South Africans are not excluded from that. Unemployment in our society remains a huge concern, specifically that many of our young people remain outside of the formal economy, outside of the job market, and that leads to many other social challenges, but also it means that our tax base is not being enriched with more and more employees who will ultimately become taxpayers in the future. Social media can be a huge opportunity, but also a significant risk. Fake news has become a full-time business, and one has to be very discreet these days to pick what narrative, what theory, or what grouping you would align yourself with. Internally, governance and leadership, although we have substantively addressed the issues that is raised on the Commission of Inquiry on Tax, we'll have a long way to go. We've launched a new leadership model, and this year we'll see us extending this work to a broader universe of leaders across the organization. Staff morale is important, so we are undertaking, within our limited resources, a huge investment in reviewing our employee value proposition so that we can make SARS an employer that attracts good quality, capable people, but also people of integrity. Our mode of work is continuously evolving. COVID gave it a kickstart again and accelerated us towards a hybrid world of work. And we are no different in our response to enabling more of our people to work remotely, but to balance that fine interplay between having people within one's physical space to inspire them, to lead them, and managing work remotely. We are working, we are learning, and none of us can declare ourselves experts in this regard, but we are joyful and excited learners on this journey. The institutional capability of SARS, it remains a challenge due to resource constraints, the state of disrepair. But in addition to that, we also have an aging workforce. Many of the skills we need are scarce, and building the institution requires ruthless focus, or may I say, monomaniacal focus and relentless effort and the wise application of limited resources. Those are the factors that influence the work we will do this year. If I now turn to the key objectives and the strategic objectives and key results, I would like to take the members quickly through these. We will share two slides. The one will be just how we express. This obviously is the overall performance plan for this year, expressed as quarterly targets. But I will. We've also put in there, honourable members, the corresponding page in the book that you have received. This refers to page 23. As I go through each of these, what we have done is we have highlighted in blue the strategic objectives. Below, we have described the experience for the user if this objective is achieved, and for this year specifically, how we will track and measure the progress in this specific objective. And we'll do this for each of the 9 objectives. And I will invite my colleagues in a moment to share with you some of the examples of the work that supports each of these objectives. So for this year, a key result that we want to achieve is that the majority of our taxpayers, they tell us that our guidance is clear, it's unambiguous, and it's easy to follow. And we will measure that through a survey through the course of the year. And for this year, we have set ourselves the ambitious target of a 75% positive response. I will hand over to my colleague, Dr. Rebone Habo, to give the committee a sense of some of the activities that we will engage in this regard. Rebone?
Thank you, Commissioner. In order to ensure that our taxpayers and traders' experience is empowering and enabling, Chair and Honourable Members, I would like to choose some of the examples of our initiative in support of our strategic objective. We would like to conduct customer needs assessment for further taxpayer awareness and education, use that evidence to develop a communication education program to empower financial literacy and fiscal responsibility, as the Commissioner has earlier alluded. We want to continue to simplify our taxpayer guides and guidelines to improve the user experience. And this follows our first ever tax glossary in all 11 languages during the past year that we launched. We want to also commence legislative preparation for the 2 programs, Advanced Ruling for Customs and Excise Act, APA program, which we want to propose to National Treasury this year. One other important element we would like to continue to do is to work with other government departments to leverage the education platform, their platform, to share our products with them so that they can share with the broader society. One last thing was to radio stations and top platform to raise awareness of digital offering that we want to continue giving. I would like to hand over to you, Commissioner, back to you.
Thank you, Rebone. Just to the members again, Dr. Rebone Habo is the head of taxpayer education. She also chairs knowledge management in the organization, and she is also a member of EXCO. We move to our second objective, which is to make it easy for taxpayers and traders to comply with their obligations. And here we've described the experience as being intuitive, as being relatively easy, and for some taxpayers, even seamless. And we believe that we have taken a first bold step in this regard. And then for taxpayers who have more complex affairs, who of necessity have to engage with us, we want to continue work to making that engagement simpler, easier, and to lower the burden of compliance. In terms of the key results that we set for this year, we measure the growth in taxpayers who migrate from manual and physical interactions to digital and self-help platforms that we provide. And this year we've set ourselves the target of achieving an 88% level of online digital engagement, which means that we want to target only 12% of engagements through physical platforms. And then that the percentage of taxpayers who are assessed using our auto-assessment functionality, we want to target that at 80%. I will now hand over to Kujo Mabetwa, who is the regional director of one of our largest regions, Gauteng North, and he's also a member of EXCO, to share with you some of the things we do on the tax side to improve the frontline service and engagement with taxpayers. Over to you, Kujo.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Good morning to the chair and good morning to members. Just touching on a couple of points around what we are doing on strategic objective number 2. The first one, I think it's an important point to make that we are looking at this from a channel agnostic point of view. So in other words, across our physical channels as well as our electronic channels. And I'm going to be talking about some of the activities that we are carrying out to make sure that we improve, we make it easy for taxpayers to comply. So the first one is we will continue to enhance and expand our auto-assessment processes. Last year, we identified about 3.4 million taxpayers for auto-assessment, and 91.2% of those accepted those auto-assessments. So we'll continue to enhance and expand the use of auto-assessments. The second one is to continue to migrate more and more taxpayers, particularly or especially the blue-collar workers, to use the digital offerings. We've seen an increase in this space, and we will continue to improve this and to offer it to as many people as possible going forward. The implementation of our operations plans are in full swing. We want to enhance this process so that it's much more robust, much more focused, and we will continue to do that to enable us to complete more and more verification cases within our turnaround times. So there's a big focus that we are putting on to this specific area. In terms of the segments, we are continuing a greater focus on SMME compliance specifically. We believe that there is a big opportunity landscape within the SMME space, and we'll continue to focus on the SMME compliance in particular. On the service charter side, There is a revised service charter that has been put on the table. We are working with that service charter to improve and reduce the number of complaints that we're receiving. And this allows us to go into the root cause of the problems and the complaints that we're receiving, as opposed to just dealing with the, you know, complaints as they come through. So we'll continue the focus on that. We will also continue the focus on reducing the turnaround times on the OTO cases that we are receiving, and working with the Office of the Tax Ombuds in that regard. In terms of the service model, we are implementing an improved service model that is once again channel agnostic, product agnostic, process agnostic. So it's going right across the organization, and making sure that we introduce an obsession with service, and that is continuing to be implemented across the organization. Not only are we doing that at a channel product basis, but also we are improving the skills of our staff to ensure that they can work right across the different channels and products. And my colleague Bongi will speak about that at a later stage. In terms of access to people living with disabilities, Nadia will address that at a later stage, because we also want to make sure that we make it easy for people living with disabilities to interact and to discharge their tax obligations. Commissioner, if you allow me, I want to hand over to my colleague Beas, who will then take us through the custom side of strategic objective number two. Beas?
Thank you, Kutcho, and thank you, Commissioner, and good morning, Chair, and all honourable members. I will touch on the customs side. As it stands today, about 90% of all trade gets a green line experience at our borders. Now, that's not good enough. There's still human touch involved. Sometimes we take a little too long. So part of what we're doing under the Custom Smart Border Program is to bring further efficient automation, as well as through risk management capabilities. I'm going to touch on a few activities on the customs side, the first one being the SACU interconnectivity program. And what this program has at heart is to match the declaration data between the SACU partners and the end state, looking at a single customs declaration, and by so doing, bringing down the cost of compliance for the legitimate trader. The second initiative that I would touch on is the deployment of the automatic number plate recognition to all commercial ports. And what this basically does, it ties up the cargo report in the back end and gives us the assurance that all goods are accounted for when they cross our borders. We've already started a pilot at Beitbridge, and we've rolled out to Lubombo and one or two smaller border posts. And in this year, we will further enhance, we will first implement at all borders, but we will also enhance the capability that comes with this technology. The third area that I would touch on, and that is to, whenever we intervene, make sure that we are more accurate, that we have access to specialization, which is centralized, and that is through the introduction of body cameras where we do physical inspections and where we can direct by means of a specialist from a remote location an inspection. Through so doing, actually improve the quality of decision-making at the border and also lessen the excessive costs on trade when there is interventions. We've also introduced the Customs Cadet Program, and we are in the pilot phase of the first group. We are hoping that over the next year, we will have two further groups, and we can then also enhance the skills and the professionalism of customs officers at the front line. Lastly, I will touch on what is called the Authorized Economic Operator Program. And in essence, what this program does, it provides more service benefits to legitimate trade, and we will step up this program over the coming year. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
Thank you very much to Cujo and to Bayers. Bayers is the Director of Ports Operation, heads of Customs, and is also a member of EXCO. We then move on to Strategic Objective 3, and that is really about presenting a credible threat of detection, because if we don't do that, then dishonest and corrupt and criminal taxpayers will simply ignore us. And so Strategic Objective 3 is very specifically based on, one, improving our capability to detect non-compliance, as well as improving our capability, but also our professionalism in the way that we respond to instances of non-compliance. SARS, as I said, is the strange organ of state that has to, on the one hand, enforce laws, whilst at the same time provide a friendly and efficient service. And so this is very important for us that we get this right, because to not succeed here undermines our own work, but also renders us ineffective at delivering the important mandate and enabling government to deliver goods and services. So we take this work very seriously, and it is probably the aspect of our work that frustrates most taxpayers. I would like to hand over, Chair and members, to a few of my colleagues just to touch on some of these. I would like to ask Mr. Smith, who is also a member of our EXCO and responsible for operations enabling and our national scheduling of work, to tell you about how we approach that from the command center, but also throughout the organization. And then for Johnston, who we've heard before, to again just tell you the discipline and regularity with which we want to achieve our compliance activities in support of revenue and compliance outcomes. Herman?
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, esteemed members. All in support of our strategic objective number 3, the modernization of our National Operations Command Center through the physical establishment of the bridge function enables SARS by means of multiple sets of visual management displays and dashboards, including leaderboards with information to view and track operations, formed across our value chain. As part of a smart board at SARS, an agile working environment is very important to SARS, and during the past 2 years of COVID, we managed a hybrid organization, meaning staff at work and staff working remotely. To do this effectively, a predictive scheduling approach, as well as a command center where work can be tracked, visibly became an imperative. This enabled SARS to know at any given point in time what work should be completed, by when and by whom. We can then actively monitor whether this is indeed happening as planned, and if not, and clear action steps can then be taken as quickly as possible. We'll now hand over to my colleague, Mr. John Makubu, on our focus to managing compliance activities. Thank you.
Thank you, Herman. There's huge focus, Chair and members, on managing compliance activities in our business in support of revenue and compliance improvements. Key amongst these areas of focus is us ensuring that we run registration campaigns. This will help us to achieve organic growth in our business. We are aware that there are various entities that should be on our register that are not. We will be focusing on utilizing data, both structured and unstructured, to recognize and detect those entities that should be on the register. So we will be keenly looking at expanding our register through registration campaigns. We'll continue to focus on outstanding returns. As I said earlier on, we did collect around 3 billion from 3 million returns that came in. We believe that this provides an opportunity for us to continue to work in this regard. Outstanding debt is another area that we are keenly focused on this year to be able to give us additional revenue. We are also aware that our dispute resolution mechanism requires us to work intently at attending to the disputes that arise. We will do this through the command center, as my colleague Herman Smith has alluded to, on a monthly basis. Our desire is to make sure that the moment we pick up non-compliance, we are able to, in an agile manner, respond to that non-compliance almost instantaneously, so that we are able to bring the taxpayer to full compliance at no given time. This we will continue to focus on because we believe that it will hike up our compliance as well as ensure that we harvest the revenue opportunities that are out there. I'll hand back to the Commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you, Herman and Johnson. Honourable members, just to give you an idea of how we work, these two gents, they are what we call the orchestration functions that coordinates work across SARS. The work is executed by the directors in each of the regions and the segments. But to ensure that we have a high level of operational rhythm and efficiency, that we track that work, that we performance manage that work, we have Herman Smith that orchestrates that through a national production schedule, reduced to daily schedules. I would really like to invite the members, when it is convenient, to come and visit us and to see our national command center. We will roll out those command centers across the region as well to see how we approach this. And then Johnson was talking about the actual work that is orchestrated within the regions and the segments. I would like to, just before I proceed, my colleague Dr. Habo earlier referred to APA. It is an acronym for Advanced Pricing Arrangements, for some members who may have wondered. And what that really is, it is an agreement between SARS and a taxpayer ahead of a new structure that a corporate or an entity may want to implement, wherein we will give them an advanced indication of how it will be treated for tax purposes. So when you hear APA or APR, that really is an advanced pricing arrangement or an advanced tax ruling. Under audits and investigation, it is important that we improve our case management. We cannot select every one of the 20 million returns for any level of verification or even for audit because we have limited capacity and it would just be impossible. And so we are building a system of risk profiling and case selection. one of my colleagues will speak to some of what we do using supervised machine learning algorithms and artificial intelligence. We have to deepen our focus on the illicit and criminal activities. We have to collaborate with the investigative directorate of the NPA to achieve and ensure that we achieve higher prosecution rates. And then we have to continue the focus on international taxes, base erosion, transfer pricing, as well as the complex arrangements of wealthy individuals. And then we have to promote our voluntary disclosure program that encourages compliance. I will ask Fayez just to give you a quick sense of what we do under strategic objective number three in terms of enforcement in customs and ports of entry.
Thank you again, Commissioner. I will be very brief. If you look at traditionally the modernization focus for the customs environment has been predominantly in the cargo space. We've seen over the period of COVID that there was a decline in travelers to South Africa, and with that also a decline of traveler-related offenses in terms of smuggling. These may include the smuggling of cash, drugs, counterfeit goods, CITES infringements, and also commercial smuggling. However, if you look at the past year, we've seen that there's been a recovery of traveler movement, albeit partial. And together with that, we've also seen that there is now an increase of detection in the frontline as well. So as part of our broader effort to address the traveler compliance issues, we will reintroduce electronic customs declaration in order to create awareness and enforce all traveler obligations. We are also busy with a project which is called the Advanced Import Payment System, and we've implemented the first phase of that, which concentrated on the building of a front end through which traders can give a notification on advanced transactions or advanced import payments. We've commenced now with the second phase of the Advanced Import Payment System, and this will add additional BOP codes, balance of payment codes, and it will also include towards the end of this financial year integration with the banks, as well as further integration with the South African Reserve Bank. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Bayers. Chair and honourable members, let me now move to strategic objective number four, which is really about engaging our employees, ensuring they are sufficiently developed, we invest in them, so that they can operate in an environment of high performance, embracing diversity in every aspect of diversity, being agile and engaged as the world of work is rapidly changing and the skills and competences and ways of working of yesterday is out of date, and we have to remain relevant at all times. That in itself is a huge area of work. I will ask my colleague in a moment to share with you some of the examples of the work we do there. But if we do that successfully, we hope to improve the level of engagement of our employees, and we've set for ourselves a target of 62%. And of course, we also want to make sure that we are consistent with the aspiration, but also the legislative requirements of transforming our workplace to address our historical imbalances and also create opportunities, both for gender as well as people with disabilities. So let me hand over to Ms. Bongiwe Mabanga. Bongi is the head of governance and risk within SARS, enterprise governance and risk, and she's also a member of ICSCO.
Thank you, Commissioner, and good morning to the Chair and the members of SCOF. As Commissioner has mentioned, as SARS, we believe that it is important to continue our focus on building our human capabilities. And as a result, because we believe that this is core and critical to SARS achieving its strategic objectives. As an example, we have implemented an enhanced approach to develop capability of our frontline staff, wherein we have introduced a channel agnostic service consultant with a more defined career progression model, which is based on objectively assessed competence. In this moment, I would like to introduce Nirala, who will talk to the leadership development in SARS, which reports directly to the commissioner. Over to you, Nirala.
Good morning, all. Thank you, Commissioner Mbongiwe, and greetings, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I will speak briefly to our guiding coalition that helps us to achieve on Strategic Objective 4, which is the leadership model. I will touch briefly on the Women in Leadership and the SARS Junior Board. Integral to the work of rebuilding SARS is the development of an appropriate leadership system. To this end, in August 2021, SARS witnessed a culmination of the leadership model, which was more than 2 years of in-depth engagements, deliberations, and co-creating by the SARS entire team, leadership team. The integrated model sets out what competencies and attributes are required of every leader. The model is regarded as the compass as we aspire to Vision 2024. It emphasizes what every leader shall do in terms of displaying personal proficiency, managing people and work, and impacting others positively. The key attributes that underpin and inform our leadership model is higher purpose, stewardship, service obsession, and care and growth. This is then defined by behaviors that enable us to portray a leadership brand and those behaviors that distract us. We fully appreciate that leadership development is a path of continuous learning and is a journey. Hence, leadership conversations are led by Commissioner with the top 70 leadership on a continuous engagement and through various platforms. This year, the focus is on a series of work sessions to ensure that the full spectrum, the essence, and the wisdom of the leadership model is cascaded to all levels of leadership. SARS instituted a Women in Leadership Committee, and the mandate of this committee is to serve as a catalyst to develop and empower leadership competencies as described in the leadership model and as it pertains to women specifically. The World Committee is in its second year of existence with robust implementation. The active participation of Commissioner and the leadership teams to guide the webinars that we host is appreciated, and we see the full range of development from these initiatives. Lastly, the Junior Board is an establishment under the leadership of Commissioner and an intentional thrust towards the strategic direction and in support of developing a high-performing, diverse, agile and engaged workforce. The establishment of the Junior Board has provided a fertile ground to invest in talent and engage talent aligned to the framework of the SARS leadership model. In addition, investment in talent is considered central towards improving the employee value proposition, succession for leadership, and addressing the agenda of the youth. The mandate of the Junior Board is to make a contribution to the strategic objectives whilst embarking on a developmental journey. We are pleased that we have Adele. Adele is the chairperson of the SARS Junior Board, and with your permission, chairperson, we'd like to invite her to share her experiences on what we call the amazing journey to the SARS Junior Board. Thank you.
Thank you, Nirala. Good morning, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Commissioner, and Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity to provide insight into the developmental journey of the very first Junior Board underpinned by the SARS Leadership Model as the compass. following the mandate provided by Commissioner that forms the core of our developmental journey, the junior board was encouraged to take the mandate forward and form an integral part of the broader leadership platform led by Commissioner and embark on the developmental orientation under the philosophy leading to learn and learning to lead. Hence, the junior board has embarked on an exciting journey since day one, where we receive privileged insights from Commissioner, guidance from EXCO leadership, and engage in productive dialogue with various leadership forums to challenge conventional thinking in different business areas within the organization. Being part of the junior board affords a sense of purpose that together we can achieve great success. This has truly been a remarkable and exhilarating opportunity, and look forward to the future of the youth at SARS as great leaders. Thank you. I will hand over to Mandisa to take us forward. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman, Committee, Honourable Deputy Minister, Commissioner and colleagues. As far as the gender equality and persons with disabilities focus of SARS, we at SARS are committed to the human rights principles, and specifically with the work we do, I would like to reference Article 1 that talks to all human beings are free and equal, and Article 21 that refers to the fact that everyone has a right to equal access to public service in his country. As at this unit, we're doing all we can to ensure that there is indeed equality for all by embedding principles of universal design and ensuring that our facilities, our systems, and in instances of persons with disabilities, their work environment, as well as their tools, are such that they are able to do their work to the best of their abilities. We also are working very closely with the South African Disabilities Association to ensure that we keep up with best practice in respect of ensuring a conducive work environment. SARS has been declared a GBV-free environment, and in this regard, we actually have what we call a No to GBV pledge, which was rolled out 2 years ago. And as far as this is concerned, about 89% of our employees have taken the pledge. The essence of this pledge is saying we at SARS want to ensure a GBV-free environment. We will be the change that we want to see in SARS. Further to that, we actually have a team of professionals that are working together to assist those who unfortunately fall victim to any form of harassment, victimization, and gender-based violence. And in this regard, we work towards ensuring that our victims within SARS are able to walk the journey towards ensuring that they become survivors, and in some instances, even activists when it comes to tackling the scourge of gender-based violence. I'll end there. Thank you. Back to you, Bongi.
Thank you, Mandisa. Mandisa Chair is our head of gender equality and people with disabilities. Commissioner, I'll just run through the last two activities under this.
Just a second, Bongi. If I can just introduce Nadia. Chair Nadia is one of our employees. She is a person that is visually impaired. And I would like Nadia to express to you her experience within SARS as a person with disabilities. Nadia?
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Good morning, everybody, Mr. Chair and all the members. Yeah, enabling the working environment for persons with disabilities within SARS always remains priority. We currently have 1.95% of the workforce as persons with disabilities. And by enabling or ensuring an accessible work environment, accessible learning opportunities and accessible systems. We create opportunities for new employment, and we also retain those employees currently within the organization. So SARS is also ensuring by creating accessible systems internally to ensure that our taxpayers with disabilities have access to modernized systems that they can use, so that make compliance amongst persons with disabilities even better, because they can also now make use of our online services platforms. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nadia. Chair, Ms. Van Niekerk is one of our star performers who fights with resilience and inspires us all every day. Let me hand over back to Ms. Mabanga. Pongi?
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner, and thanks to Nadia. The last two activities, Chair, first relate to the relaunch of our Customs Cadet Program, as we believe that it is important to us achieving our strategic activities to continue with this program. And the very last one, as an institution, we have to date repositioned the anti-corruption and integrity function under new leadership. And this we'll be focusing with greater urgency to address integrity breaches and corrupt practices amongst our own employees. Thank you, Commissioner, and back to you.
Thank you, Bongi, for coordinating this section. Very important strategic objective four, which is about our people. Chair, I'd like to move to strategic objective five, which, as you mentioned early on, is indispensable to the work we do. It is about data integrity and deriving insights to improve outcome. I would like to share with you briefly for this year, we want to measure that specifically as the risk detection and profiling that is largely automated. As I said earlier on, we cannot manually select every instance of non-compliance. It would be impossible, and therefore automating this process for many of our taxpayers and traders is important. And for this year, we would like for standard taxpayers to achieve 85% and 65% for complex taxpayers. Mr. Marius Papenfuss is the EXCO member, is an EXCO member, but he's also responsible for managing the enterprise data management activity. Marius?
Thank you, Commissioner. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, and members of the committee. In the coming year, we will continue to add to our sources of data to improve service whilst detecting and responding to compliance risks. Secondly, we'll deepen data science, as referenced earlier, as a discipline to expand the use of machine learning algorithms and artificial intelligence technologies. Thirdly, we will create additional value-added operational dashboards for both the national and regional command centers, which my colleague, Mr. Smith, briefly talked about. And that is, of course, to enable performance management throughout the organization. Fourthly, we will continue our adherence to the OECD information exchange standards and the application thereof. And lastly, we will upgrade the SARS enterprise data warehouse infrastructure and software in line with the allocated budget. Thanks very much for the opportunity, Commissioner and committee members.
Thank you, Marius. Chair, Marius went through this in a few seconds, but I can assure you this is an inordinately important function, highly complex, and an area that we have huge focus to achieve our efficiency. The next objective is about modernizing our systems. This specific objective is about building the enabling environment that technology platforms and interfaces creates for us to engage with our various stakeholders, specifically our taxpaying public, to make it accessible to them and make it user-friendly. The experience we want to create really is an empowering and enabling experience. We still have many of our specifically blue-collar workers, as Mr. Mabetwa pointed out, that may still be averse to this, so we work hard to get more and more of them educated and comfortable with technology. Before I introduce the speaker who will address this, Mr. David Futoli, it may be appropriate just to say that Mr. Intikap Sheikh, who is the head of technology delivery services and also a member of EXCO, is absent today due to the fact that he celebrates Eid, the month of Ramadan, came to an end, and it may also be appropriate at this stage for me to use this opportunity to wish all of our employees who celebrate Eid today and who have come through a successful month of observing Ramadan, as well as members of the committee who celebrate today who may not be present, and anyone who listens today, to wish them the most joyous occasion of this religious celebration. Chair standing in for Mr. Sheikh today is Mr. David Sotole, who I will allow to share with you some of the work that we are doing in this area. David?
Thank you, Commissioner, and good morning, Chair and honorable members. I will take you through the planned initiatives that the technology division have embarked on for this financial year. So we, building on our technology enabling platform, we have identified five critical efforts that are planned for this this year. The first one, we will embark on upgrading mission critical IT platforms, infrastructure and software. The second one, we will continuously upgrade security and implement security initiatives on mission critical IT platforms. As we all know that the world is now on attack on cyber crimes, we will make sure that SARS guard ourselves to those attacks. Third one, we will ensure that all budgeted for and authorized IT supply contracts are renewed and extended within expiry dates and with rigor negotiations by enhancing IT supply management, software asset management, governance and processes. Fourth one, we will continue to adapt and grow the skill set of those responsible for enabling digital platforms and IT security infrastructure and controls. This part is very important to ensure that SARS looks after those people that are currently maintaining those systems, making sure that we are at advanced stage in terms of technology skills that we need. The fifth one, we will continue to provide production maintenance and support by ensuring that all threats to mission critical IT platforms are mitigated as per Security Operations Center and IT Security Operations Control. Secondly, we will also ensure that all protocol security systems enhancements are implemented as planned on mission critical IT platforms. Finally, we also ensure that all protocol functional system enhancements or fixes are also implemented on a critical IT platform. Thank you, Commissioner. I'll hand over to you.
Thank you, David, and thank you for standing in for Intercap today. Chair, moving on, we then move to strategic objective number 7. And we've deliberately made this a strategic objective because we are mindful that we work with other people's money. These are the hard-earned resources that we are provided from the tax revenue that South Africans contribute. And so we have introduced resource stewardship as an explicit objective to ensure that we are efficient and effective in the use of this money and that we deliver high-quality outcomes and demand of ourselves the highest levels of performance excellence. Because as you heard, we have limited resources. In fact, as I will share with you later, we are still significantly short of the level of funding that is required to build a smart modern SARS. For this year, we have under this objective set three specific sub-objectives. The first is to look at reconfiguring our cost to align with international peers. Our human cost is still very high as a percentage of our cost, and you can imagine, therefore, what salary increases and other people-related costs does to our overall cost. We want to maintain an ICT investment of at least 2%. We also want to make sure that we work within a well-governed environment and therefore achieve an unqualified audit opinion and demonstrate a percentage of deviation between the allocation that we receive and our actual spending within a 5% band. My colleague, Ms. Yolanda van der Merwe, who is also our Chief Financial Officer and a member of EXCO, will share with you some of the focus areas we have selected for this year. Yolanda?
Thank you very much, Commissioner, and good morning to the Chairperson, the Deputy Minister, and the members of SCOF. I think Commissioner has touched on some of the points, but given the constraints on our financial resources, we continuously prioritize activities and programs that logically has the highest impact. We also maintain a strong focus on our costs and our cost structures through exploring continuous efficiency gains to make sure that we fund the organization appropriately with what we've got. The Commissioner has touched on people cost. Our people cost is aligned to what the OECD recommend, but it is significant in context of the total cost. Therefore, we need to manage it closely. Further, to ensure value for money while we serve the organization in our best possible way, we need to continuously to improve our procurement governance as well as delivery through the integrity and vetting of our prospective service providers and our vendors. We have a strong focus on contract management, and we continue to build our procurement capability to ensure that we do serve the organization and ensure value for money. Lastly, we manage our audit process very closely to ensure that that we partner with our auditors and that we address all findings that they do arise or any other matters timely to ensure that we will work towards achieving the clean audit report as we have documented. Thank you very much, Commissioner. Back to you.
Commissioner, where are you?
Chair, can you hear me?
Yeah, okay, we can hear you now.
Someone has muted me, so let me just come back. Chair, so let me continue by saying that the members would be encouraged to know that in all of the strategic work that we have done, the development of our strategic plan and journey, the strategic objectives, how that translates into our annual, monthly, and daily plans, as well as the development of our leadership model, that we have not engaged a single consultant. This is the product of the leadership team of SARS rather than outsourcing this work to consultants. The committee can be encouraged that this is the work we do and what you should hold us accountable for. I will quickly touch on the last two strategic objectives, Chair and honorable members. The one is we recognize that we are part of a system and we have to improve the entire system, not just the organization. And therefore, relationships with stakeholders in government, and in the public sector with intermediaries are very, very important. We have shared this platform with the committee and members of the intermediary community, and you will recall how important this relationship is. We must ensure that these interactions and exchanges are professional, that they are based on competence, but also that we can hold each of these partners to the higher level of accountability and professionalism that the system requires. For this year, we will measure how effective we have achieved the management of our relationships by conducting a survey towards the latter part of the year and hopefully achieve a satisfaction level of 65%. In terms of the actual activities, I will share with you by way of example. We have established a dedicated tax and customs group to address a number of matters with specific intermediary communities in relation to service issues, compliance issues, both of taxpayers but also of intermediaries, as well as seeking their input into our modernization program. We must understand the frustrations and limitations that we sometimes create for intermediaries and work harder to enable them, because they, if they are effective, then they enhance the delivery of our mandate. Third-party service providers or data providers are extremely important for us in the work that Marius alluded to in terms of our artificial intelligence and data science work. And often the integrity of that information lets us downstream if it is incomplete. So, for example, if an employer who is an important provider of information does not provide us with accurate information, payroll information, it creates downstream difficulties for the individual taxpayers when they seek to fulfill their obligation. The information from banks, from pension fund administrators, from medical aides are equally important, as well as information that we get on request or information that we exchange with international jurisdictions. Increasingly, we have to work with every single relationship to build a near complete universe of data from on which we can build our machine learning algorithms. Then we also have to support the newly established Border Management Agency. FARS has, in the year that has passed, signed an implementation protocol, and this year it is about execution against that protocol, and we are meeting shortly with our colleagues from Home Affairs and the BMA, Water Management Agency, to drive the implementation of the intent. And then working with the rest of government is time-consuming but important for us because ultimately we are integral to the well-being and the efficacy of a capable state. So that's really strategic objective number 8. And then all the work we do results in either an erosion or a increase in public trust and confidence. And therefore, that work is extremely important, Chair. This year, we will again conduct a survey to see generally what the public, what they feel towards us. And an important measure is also that we are able to deliver against the service charter that we undertake. We have the unenviable task of enforcing laws, tax and customs laws on the one hand, whilst maintaining a world-class service to taxpayers on the other hand. And taxpayers quite rightfully are unforgiving at times when we drop the ball. And so we will have to work harder and harder to improve our entire system, improve our capability, our competence, and professionalize our engagement. We have to act beyond reproach. We have to ensure that our own employees, we have repositioned this year, for example, our anti-corruption and integrity work under new leadership to ensure that when a SARS tax or customs employee feels it is okay to collude with taxpayers, that they will be dealt with. Such members, employees are not welcome. in our institution, and we will use every thing in our available to us to deal with instances of integrity breaches or unlawful behavior by our own employees. If we fail in this, then everything else I've shared with you is undermined. But we work within the context of risk, so I will very quickly share with you how we see the risk. You have this these slides within your deck, Chair, so I won't go through each one of these, save to say that the way this is organized is that there are a number of risk themes that we have to take care of. If these conditions manifest, they undermine our work. The far right column labeled mitigating actions for this coming year, and in fact the rest of the period is the work we do to mitigate these risks. And again, you will see how this then neatly overlays into the program of work that myself and my colleagues have shared with you. I will not go into detail except to leave this with you, and if there are any specific points you want to highlight or raise as questions, then you are certainly free to do so, Chair. Then we want to just take the committee through our resources over the MTIF period. I think we have said this before, that for the last 8 years, SARS has experienced a funding reduction in real terms, and therefore, from about 2014, there's effectively, in real terms, been a reduction in funding to SARS, even if we take into account the billion rand that we were allocated last year. It does not address the shortfall. To give you a sense thereof, if we had escalated the SARS grant just by the CPI, it would have grown at almost 6%, whilst the actual growth for this year is have just been just above 2%. Our own estimate says that for this year to operate effectively, SARS requires 14.7 billion, whereas our grant is 11.3 billion, meaning that a significant portion of our work and our resource requirements remains unfunded. The OECD and its international peers says that the cost-to-revenue ratio of 1% should be maintained. In the year that is past, that ratio was 0.69%, and in the year that we are currently in, that ratio is 0.72%. But in the outer years of the MTIF, you can see how that reduces again to 0.69 and 0.62%. Whilst we understand that this is a whole of government constraint, we make the appeal to say that an efficient and well-functioning SARS counterintuitively spend more money on SARS and the whole of the revenue collection machinery improves, and in that way we can address some of the fiscal constraints the government has. So at the moment we still are operating, as I point out, with significant underfunding. This slide just gives you our workforce. You can see over the period has reduced from about just over 14 million to under 12,000 people, because we were able to recommence some recruitment. We now stand at 12,400 for the year. We have also, you will recall, brought into our organization over 700 cleaners who were previously insourced. They are now members of staff. They enjoy the employee value proposition of staff, and I can tell you that they are overjoyed. Some of them, we are now focusing on bringing them through development programs to see what other opportunities may exist for them in the organization. I raised earlier that we have an aging workforce. That remains a huge challenge for us. In the next 2 years, we will have about a third of our workforce that will theoretically qualify for retirement. Not all of them will retire because they will stay on in the allowable years, but 131 of them will be compulsory. Potentially 2,800 may apply for voluntary early retirements with another 1,500 volunteers. So we manage this carefully. We have commenced a program of so-called graybeards, where we will look at using some of the employees who have retired but are able to help build skill within SARS on a basis that is provided for within our governance structures. The impact of not being appropriately funded is that we cannot maintain the required investment in modernization. We cannot address all of the immediate critical skills as well as preparing the jobs for the future. We have, in this current year, 1,270 of the critical skills recruitment underway, but about 2,300 of the vacancies are still unfunded. This gives you just a view of the decline in capital investment. And again here, you can see that this is not sustainable over the longer term. We do what we can with what we have, but unless we step up our modernization work, increasingly SARS will fall behind in terms of its ability to effect its mandate. This is a summary of that, and you can see that this is what our current allocation is for the current year, plus the projected allocation in the two outer years, and against each of that, what our view is of the level of funding that is required. So last year, I shared with you that we were just over 9 billion over the three-year term short in terms of funding. We have now added a 3.5 billion business case for the addressing the inefficiency at Beitbridge border. That allocation added to the 9 billion gives us a shortfall over the MTF period of 13 billion. And you'll see there our headcount as we projected over the three-year period. So, Chair, just to wrap up the funding and resource constraints, for this particular year, I can share with you that we are currently also facing a very disgruntled labor, organized labor leaders who have applied to the CCMA for strike action. We have engaged with them, but we've also had to say to them that we don't have the resources this year for an across-the-board salary increases. We can use a little bit of the money to address internal parity issues and retention, but effectively our current allocation does not allow for a conventional or traditional increase to our salary, and understandably they are not very happy. We also are almost 2 billion short of what we believe we should be spending in terms of our physical facilities as well as our capital and modernization projects. And therefore, I think we just want to register with the committee our concern, and we continue to engage with the minister, the deputy minister, who has always given us significant support, as well as our colleagues in Treasury. To draw towards a close then, looking a year ahead, our must-win battles is, as I started out saying, is to broaden the tax base, to improve voluntary compliance and tax morality, to use the money we have intelligently and efficiently, to build and maintain the crucial partnerships that are interdependent to our success, and to build an organization with integrity, capability, and professionalism that can be trusted and admired. We continue to face the challenges of a very challenging global and local economic context that are likely to remain subdued. The current war is clearly also not going to be helpful for economic recovery. It will in fact drive up inflation, the cost of money, and may in fact result in disruptions in supply chain and the increase in, and even scarcity in terms of food. The continued impact of corruption in our society is not helpful for us, and the low levels of compliance stubbornly persist, hence the need to step up the work we do, and hence the need for additional resources. So these are some of the issues, and we continue to understand, Chair and Honourable Members, that employee engagement, capturing the hearts, minds, but also enhancing the capability of our staff remains central. So that for this year, Parliament has confirmed the challenge set by the Minister that we collect almost 2 trillion gross, refund about 340 of that back to taxpayers to collect a net revenue of 1.598, almost 1.6 trillion. That is the work. That is the number that our work this year must produce. These are some of the areas we will focus on within the programs that we have shared with you. And ultimately, Chair and members, what winning means for SARS is we have to find this important balance between managing the risks that undermines the fiscus, that keeps compliance low and under recovery of revenue, whilst at the same time making it easier and simpler for taxpayers to engage with us. That's really what all of our work comes down to. If we do that well, then we will win. Our ambition to achieve strategic intent is ultimately, according to our strategic objectives, to continue to clarify taxpayer obligations, to make it easier for them to comply, and to build a credible threat and a response to non-compliance. Our challenge, as I point out, is to balance this tension between service and risk in terms of our operational aspiration in the short term to reduce waiting times, improve turnaround times, reduce the need for taxpayer support, and in the end state, imagine an environment where we could eliminate the need for any service-related inquiry by taxpayers and make the fulfillment of their obligations seamless. In other words, our service mantra is that the best service is no service. No one wakes up in the morning and say, I wish I can go to SARS. I can't wait to go and queue. I can't wait to to call the center. If taxpayers never have to engage with us and simply find their fulfillment of the obligation as being seamless, we would have achieved what it means to be a smart modern SARS. I hope that by 2024, we will have substantively laid the foundation to this aspiration, but I can tell you it is going to be an ongoing piece of work that we are excited about. I hope that the committee through this presentation, Honourable Chair, will have received some insight and clarity around what we will do with the over 11 billion of funds that you allocate to us. We will occasionally report back and enable you to hold us accountable. Thank you. Let me hand over to you, Chair, and we are happy to engage in questions and discussion. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Commissioner and your team, for the presentation of the APP. Let me invite honourable members who want to engage with the report to ask clarity, speaking questions and make comments. I see Dr. George. Can I identify or note the hands, Dr. George? I Alan and Tebogo. For now, I only see the end of Dr. George. Is there another Honorable Sarupen? Okay. Dr.
My hand is up, Chair. I'm sorry, I can't find my statutory raise hand thingy.
Okay. Honorable Abram. Over to you, Dr. George.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and thanks, Commissioner. A very comprehensive presentation and very exciting, as you mentioned. On the must-win battles, specifically broadening the tax base and improving voluntary compliance and fiscal citizenship, there also does need to be a lot more than the measures that you mentioned. Obviously, there's only so much that is under the control of SARS. To broaden the tax base, we need to grow the economy to get more people and more businesses into the tax net. So we need to have policies that are conducive to growth. That's a basic thing that needs to be worked on a macro level. And then also on the voluntary compliance and fiscal citizenship, how government spends the people's money matters. Taxpayers become resentful and reluctant to pay when their money gets grossly mismanaged or leaks out of the system and doesn't find its way to service delivery as it should. So as much as there is an obligation on taxpayers to comply with the law, so there is a mutual obligation on government to spend wisely and punish those who steal the money. If our economy was stronger and money better managed, there would in fact be more money available for SARS, because obviously the fisc would be stronger. And I think that those things all go hand in hand. We need economic growth. We need to get more revenue. And that will make life easier then, specifically as you mentioned. However, it is very clear what the constraints are, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done, not only by SARS. I do recall in 2015 how the process of state capture or to capture SARS began, and very turbulent years followed. Commissioner, I wanted to get an understanding from you whether we can be or start resting assured that that era is now completely resolved and that we are now in the better future for SARS. Then on the strategic objectives, on the strategic objective for taxpayers perceive that guidance is clear and unambiguous. It is a target of 75%. I was wondering, it does seem a little on the low side, given, you know, if you look at some of the other targets and the high standards that SARS sets for itself. I was just wondering why that seemed a little bit lower. And then on number eight, the objective number eight, that 65% of intermediaries are satisfied. That also seems quite low, given the innovations, et cetera. I understand that, you know, there's been a turbulent environment and past couple of years, but I'd just like to get some insights as to why that appears to be relatively low. On the demonstrating effective resource stewardship, I think that is a really good and well-placed initiative, objective, because that should be for every government department in South Africa. Because if every government department was mindful of that, spending the money they get as wisely as they can, then I think we would be in a much better space overall. So I think that is, you know, really encouraging. I know it's been there before, and also very encouraging that you are not using consultants to develop these, that it all comes from within SARS. I think other government departments can also learn from that. Those are all I have for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. George. Honorable Sarupen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thanks for the opportunity. Just to follow up on where Dr. George left off, in terms of inculcating tax compliance. And the minister started by speaking about the need for SARS to be well regarded by taxpayers, and the various officials from SARS that speak about the capture period. I think we can all agree that the recent troubles at SARS and at negative press has eroded some public confidence in SARS. So in this context, can we be taken through what SARS has done in the last year to overcome this more recent legacy, as well as to demonstrate clean, honest, and efficient SARS to taxpayers, and how this reflects in its APP? And then, Chair, within the APP itself, my second question is, this SARS includes in its APP meeting timeframes for VAT refunds, taxpayer audits, and other services to taxpayers, because I couldn't find it in the strategic objectives as a line item. And of course, people who work in any system will perform based on the targets they've been given as an institution. And where customer service issues such as timeous audits and VAT refunds are not an institutional target, it doesn't become a priority for the staff administering them. So I'd like to understand why these critical customer service targets are not included in the APP. And then just with regards to one specific target in the APP, Chair, which is on strategic objective one, that 77% of surveyed taxpayers are satisfied with the clarity and certainty provided by SARS. I'd like to get a deeper understanding of how many individuals are surveyed and what percentage of registered taxpayers this represents. And if they survey specifically business and taxpayers who are not auto-assessed, because when you survey individuals who are auto-assessed and accept their assessments, this almost serves no purpose because they wouldn't have to engage at the same level with SARS and its written materials, its documents, its staff, et cetera, and it would distort the outcome in that survey. So I'd like to get a deeper understanding of that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Sarupe, Honorable Abram, then Honorable Shivam.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much. Chairperson, for me, I would like to start, for instance, where some of the questions from, it was a comment from Honorable George, where I wanted to check what the challenge is for the appropriated funds for SARS not to be where they would have loved them to be. I am saying that I start where he also mentioned it, because I heard him making an argument as to why maybe they are not funded at the level that they are supposed to be funded. And I would like National Treasury to come in this instance, because I believe they are the ones responsible for allocating funds. Is it because of limited funding, or is it because they are not convinced that SARS is doing what they think SARS should be doing? I got the issue of the recovery of about, in fact, more than 7 billion of illicit taxes. And this, for me, is much appreciated. However, one is also interested to know what the estimate is in terms of the illicit tax flows, because 7 billion could probably be a drop in the ocean compared to what gets lost in this process. For me, lastly, Chair, is on the question of women leadership and one is the effort that SARS is doing both for women and people with disabilities. But my clarity question is the deployment of women. When we talk women empowerment and developing their leadership, how are they deployed generally? Rather in terms of the deployment or appointment of people with disabilities, SARS is meeting the government policy threshold. Thank you so much, Chair.
Thanks, Abraham. Honorable Shivam.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Just a few clarity issues or like contextual issues that have to be brought forth here. One is what has SARS done differently on the phenomenon of tax avoidance? Like, we have spoken about this several times before, and with an understanding that the tax avoidance that is done mostly by the resource extractors, like in the mining sector, where they shift profits to the tax havens. What is being done differently now? Because I think there was an agreement across all the sectors that a lot of these multinational companies in the mining sector somehow are all involved in tax avoidance. I mean, like even in the Lonmin, when the report on the killing of workers in Marikana was later on published, it was illustrated that Lonmin had shifted close to 3 billion rand to Bermuda, money which could have been utilized to pay workers and was going to broaden the revenue base upon which the revenue collector could get the revenue. What is being done differently on the phenomenon of aggressive tax avoidance? And I think that must be distinguished from illicit financial flows. There is a separate issue. We're talking about aggressive tax avoidance. What exactly is being done? That is number one. But two, what is that strategy or plan or system on revenue collection from the e-commerce businesses, particularly those that are trading a lot of goods and services? Your Amazon, Alibaba, if they're trading Uber, and a variety of other online trading platforms that are generating revenue from South Africa's tax base. Is there a mechanism or a system of collecting income tax and company taxes as well, because they're basically operating and doing what the brick and mortar businesses are doing in South Africa? Is there that the different platform is being utilized now? What exactly is SARS doing? Or what is the update in that regard? The last issue is in relation to the BBD contract, the IT contract, which has been in existence for a very long time in SARS. It looks like there are issues that are associated with context and background as to when was that contract? Does BBD have access to tax? And is there a sound legislative foundation to perpetually and endlessly extend the contract of BBD as a software provider or IT provider for SARS? Because I heard one of the many speakers who were speaking here was saying that we are celebrating enforcing NSARS, but there is a BBD contract which seems to be not necessarily an enforcing component. Let's hear what is the context and a detailed report as to just what is it about. I hope that is clear. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Shibambo. Over to you, Deputy Minister, Treasury, SARS Commissioner.
Thanks, Chair. Let me allow the Commissioner first and the colleagues from National Treasury. I'll come after them if it's okay with you, Chair.
Okay. No, no problem. Agreed. Commissioner?
Thank you.
Treasury.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the members' comments and questions, which I will try and respond to as comprehensively as I can. I just want to signpost to two of my colleagues that Dr. Rebone will respond to Mr. Salupin's question about how we conduct surveys, our methodology, and our sample sizes. And I will begin to respond to Mr. Shivambu's question around response to tax avoidance, but ask my colleague, Mr. Johnson, to also add to that. Let me start off, Chair, with the comments and questions by Dr. George. I think, first of all, to just restate what he said, that clearly an organization such as SARS must avoid developing a long list of things to do that is uncoordinated and not prioritized. So I can double the list of must-win battles. What we have presented to the committee is what we consider to be the battles that, unless we win it, will continue to undermine our efforts. Clearly, this is not the only work we do, but the APP is also not a full list of everything we do, but the programs that are prioritized and tabled at the committee. At the same time, to share to yourself, Honorable Chair and members, that the notion of a five-year plan is outdated. Today, we live in a world where dynamic planning and constant adjustment and alignment and allocation of resources is required. So even though we are given a planning framework and a clear strategic intent, we will be alive to how changes in our environments and relative progress within the organization will continuously challenge us to review and to keep our plans dynamic. Last year was a case in point where we did not plan for COVID. Our five-year plan and even our annual plan in 2019-20 would not have foreseen what we needed to do, but we were alive and responsive and happy to report that we think we have adequately responded to the challenge that COVID has provided us. Just that an important context in terms of planning and in terms of what we consider to be our priorities. Regarding the tax base correlation to the economy, it's clearly not a question that I must answer, but to say that SARS does not create the economy, but we have to work within any given economy and ensure that we do the fundamental work that ensures that within any given economy and given any economic growth, we ensure that every taxpayer who ought to be registered is registered, every filing obligation by every taxpayer is fulfilled, that every assessment that a taxpayer submits to us is assessed, that every assessment outcome is implemented, that any debt that taxpayers owe to SARS is collected, and that any investigation, verification or dispute is appropriately effected. We believe that if we do that well, then in any given economy, we'll produce an optimal revenue outcome. This was none more demonstrated last year when SARS grew the revenue base by 25% in an economy that will have nominally grown by just around 12%. Obviously, there were some windfalls from the commodity pricing, but that is only one of the contributory factors. We have shared with you compliance revenue of 210 billion that is directly correlated to the efforts of SARS. And we will continue that effort. How money is spent, I support that principle completely, because not only is it about the efficacy and the delivery of goods and services to society, but it is also impacts the level of confidence that SARS has in the whole of government, and therefore also in terms of the performance and relationship with SARS and its public. Will state capture return? I'm afraid I have to say that if our society cannot adequately respond to the current period that state capture has produced the eroding of social fiber, of economic activities, if those who are held or who have perpetrated and sponsored these deeds are not held accountable, then state capture will return. And so we cannot speak for the whole of SARS, for the whole of society, but we can say without any fear of contradiction that we will do what we need to do, Dr. George, to address the impact of state capture, even as far as our own employees and the integrity and governance systems of our organization is concerned. So state capture, as long as there are people, and other forms of corruption will sadly persist if we don't strengthen the integrity of our systems across government, if we don't build a capable state built on meritocracy rather than on patronage, and if we do not hold those accountable for their acts of omission or commission. All of our targets are stated in relation to where we are and the improvement that we want to achieve in 1 year. It is not the end state improvement, but the setting of targets is between a science and an art. If we set a target that is too low, then it does not inspire or stretch us. If we set a target that is too high, then people give up before they even try. So I want to assure you, Dr. George, that every target is well considered and in terms of an improvement. So for SO1, for example, in last year, the target was 65%. We achieved 67%. This year, we have set ourselves a target of 75%. So it is a jump from 67% to 75%, which we are aiming for this year. So I'm using that one as an example, but please be assured that we will stretch as much as we can, given our resources, but also to keep people engaged and not give up before they have even tried. The question to the Honourable Member, Mr. Sarupan, what are we doing to address some of the irritations? We have actually had a full presentation with SCOF regarding that a few weeks ago. But let me, just by way of example, reference some of that. From a service to taxpayer perspective, we continually look at simplifying the experience, as I pointed out earlier, that ultimately we want to reduce the number of instances where a taxpayer has to come to SARS. So we don't, for example, want to improve our queue management system. We want to address the systemic failures that creates the need for people to come and queue in the first place. We don't want to improve our call center time only. We will, of course, work on that, but we'll never have enough contact center agents to deal with all of the calls that we get. And so, again, it is about addressing the fundamental inefficiencies or systemic weaknesses so that the need for a service intervention is unnecessary. But all of this has to be stated in context. So, for example, last year, of our individuals who file, we selected 3.4 million for the auto-assessment function. The auto-assessment means they have to do almost nothing other than either confirm or edit the assessment outcome we provided them. I can share with you, 9 out of 10 taxpayers, or 91% of them, accepted the auto-assessment outcome, and that was purely enabled by the use of data and artificial intelligence. So you will not hear from 91% of our taxpayers because they have had a pleasant experience. 1 million of them were issued with an automated assessment, largely because they earned below the 500,000 mark and did not require to file. And then a number of them, specifically those who had a change in their circumstances, may need an engagement with FARS. We have pointed out, for example, that home office expenses and changes to provisional taxpayer status as examples of changes that require an engagement, and often that engagement is seamless, but sometimes it does create an irritation to taxpayers. For the entire population of taxpayers, 93% of those who were assessed in under 5 seconds. 85% of them will have received their refunds within 72 hours if they were not selected. That means 1.67 million taxpayers received refunds of just over 20 billion rand. So those are instances, and I can share more of that, but there is a presentation on record that addresses that. I want to point out, though, because it speaks to some of the issues, also the later questions, that remains a huge challenge to SARS. Almost 3.5 million instances of that has run through our automated risk assessment process using data and machine learning algorithms. Only 320, less than 10%, 8.4% to be exact, of those 3.5 million instances were selected for verification. So again, the majority, more than 90% of those taxpayers, will not have a service issue with SARS. They will experience a response that is appropriate and in line with their expectations. In other words, 92 out of every 100 assessments go through seamlessly without any intervention. 8 out of every 100 are selected for verification. Of that, just over half of those cases have been completed at the time that we made this report. It's more now, with a value of 15 billion rand that had that we had detected. 75% of the 320 cases were completed within 21 days. And noteworthy, those who are selected are, half of them are continual and habitual non-compliant taxpayers. We also, in addition to that, completed 138,000 cases from the prior year that yielded a revenue of 21.5 billion. The total revenue yield from that risk management is over 36 billion rand just in the year. That against 26 billion rand in the prior year. We have also secured 54 successful criminal prosecutions from that contravention. So the member will remember we said this is this continual battle and tension between providing good service and providing service, whilst managing the risk to the fiscus. We are still convinced that if the risk management work just in last year produced over 70 billion rand of additional revenue, that that work has to continue. And having said that, I want to give the committee the assurance that we will continually refine our risk profiling and case selection to bring about a better balance between risk and service. I would like to invite Dr. Rebone Habo to just share in a few minutes how we approach surveys. Dr. Habo?
Thank you, Commissioner, for the question as well. How we conduct surveys, we've got two types of surveys. Surveys that we use our tax register, which means the taxpayers who contacted or interacted with SARS, and the public opinion survey, which is totally randomly selected for the from the community. So for this particular survey, Clarity and Sustainability Survey was used, we used the tax base because we wanted to check the taxpayers who interacted with our service. So in that, we wanted to reflect and let them give us feedback on the service they received. other than that, it wouldn't have made sense to reflect on people who did not interact with us. And what we do is we take 25% of the population from our register and we send surveys out to them. And it is for individuals and businesses and as well. So for particular one, we have an overall of 4,648 taxpayers who responded back to us with a response rate that is normal, acceptable for large-scale survey. So that helps us to understand what they actually say, and we triangulate with the public opinion survey to get to understand what is the difference between the two. If you look at the outcome of both, they're almost similar or almost on the same level. I hope I've answered the question, Commissioner.
Thank you, Dr. Harbour. If the members have any further questions, I'm sure they will flag that, but thank you for your input. Then to the question asked by Mr. Shabambu, the questions. The first is tax avoidance remains a huge challenge for SARS. The members will recall that after my appointment, I re-established the tax committee led by Judge Davis to have another look at the areas where we have the highest risk. Those areas, in summary, will cover points that was raised, including aggressive tax erosion practices and transfer pricing challenges. It is also pointed out that we need to do a lot more in terms of VAT administration. I've shared with you the work that we have done so far. What specifically are we doing? We have re-established the large an international business division in SARS. That is gaining momentum. We have shared, for example, that just in terms of some of the successes we've had there in terms of the audit and investigative work, which I will ask Mr. Johnson Makubu, just to give you some of that results and highlights. We have also established the high wealth individual segment. In both of those segments, we have seen a measurable increase in compliance levels, as well as a year-over-year growth in revenue. And Mr. Makubu can share with you some of that data in a moment. In terms of the e-commerce question, as we have reported before, e-commerce is well covered by SARS for a number of years through VAT. On electronic services, on imported VAT on imported service, we have secured 300 million, and VAT on electronic services yielded 1 billion rand for the year. We will continue to work on that. Mr. Shabambu will recall, I said earlier on, one of our must-win battles is that we need to be better connected into the economy. Some of the world-leading systems is where the revenue authority is connected to every point of sale and makes the transfer of information quite seamless. Tax avoidance remain an issue, but I will leave that to Mr. Johnson to respond in a minute. In terms of e-commerce, the digitalization of business models, the companies mentioned are examples such as Amazon, Google, Facebook, and others. The committee will be aware, and maybe at some point in time, a more comprehensive update can be given. This is work that is led at the OECD, at the G20, introducing several new concepts. One of it is that, so let me just repeat, in terms of VAT, that is already in our system. What is not in our system is contribution from the income tax that these companies make. Mr. Shabambu is quite right. They are present in South Africa, unlike in traditional business models where they would have a permanent establishment or a physical presence. If you are a digital company providing goods and services over the internet, there is no need for physical presence. The traditional nexus that creates a taxing right is physical presence or permanent establishment. The new proposal is that economic presence will determine a taxing right. And what is under discussion now is the whole issue of a minimum tax level, where there is growing consensus at the G20 about what that level should be. In fact, next week we meet as the heads of tax administrations to receive an update on that work. Then also how profits will be distributed, not only to where in the jurisdiction where these companies have their head offices located, but rather in proportion to the economic presence. So that work will continue and will obviously mean that countries like South Africa will receive a percentage of the income tax from international companies who have economic presence here, albeit they don't have physical presence. Let me ask Johnson just to talk to some of the results we've seen, increase in compliance and increase in year-on-year revenue, specifically in the work that is done in the large and international business segment, as well as the high wealth segment. And then I will return to the question on the IT service providers that works with SARS.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think at the tail end of what the Commissioner speaks about in e-commerce, again, we've seen a powerful triangulation of data through the country payment systems where we collaborate with the likes of the Reserve Bank to be able to extract payments that are made internationally. And through that, we are able to pick up non-compliance, and we have touched base with about 88 entities that are specializing in foreign services, foreign entities that are supplying vertible products or services rather. And we think that this will continue to be an area that will give us additional leverage, and we continue to look at ensuring that the compliance levels are where they ought to be. And as far as issues around tax avoidance, I think what is giving us advantage so far, and we'll continue to exploit that advantage, is the country-by-country reporting. We're starting to see, as the Commissioner has reported in the past, in excess of 100 jurisdictions that share information with us on multinationals. Our teams in the large business and international segment utilize that information largely to ensure that arm's-length transaction principles are applied when these entities transfer and monies into their mother entities or other jurisdictions. And we have seen around 11 transfer pricing cases in the last financial year. And again, these cases are generally quite lengthy in terms of the audits and the triangulation of data. But we are satisfied that there is additional revenue that we're starting to see in this regard. As I indicate, 345 cases were completed that yielded around 11.9 billion rands, and 45 cases related to assessed losses that were reversed to the tune of 1 billion rands. If I just leave the committee with an assurance that through the country-by-country reporting and automatic exchange of information, we are starting to gain leverage in this particular area. It will continue to be an area of focus as we build capacity and skills. As the Commissioner has reported in the past, in the LBNI environment, we will start to see additional revenue being collected in this particular area. It's one of the areas that we focus on, international taxes. I'll stop there, Commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you, Johnson. Turning then to the last question of the relationship SARS has with IT service providers, specifically through a master service agreement. Let me just point out the following. One, that the members will know that this is an issue that is investigated by the public protector, that on Friday the public protector's office issued a report. SARS is currently studying the report and will, in line with the requirement, respond to the public protector in very, very great detail in terms of the findings that is set out in the report, as well as the remedial actions that is provided. I will therefore not go into the specific detail of that response, since we are currently working through that. What I can, though, share with the committee, and we have shared this in great detail and at great length with our colleagues in Treasury, with the Office of the Public Protector, that when SARS took the decision in the late 2000s, that it would move away from enterprise resource planning administration systems, and that it would build bespoke systems for itself, very specific to its use. One of the implications of that is that it built partnerships with providers to walk that journey. It is akin to one of us making a decision to buy a particular car from a particular maker. We are then enjoined to take our car to that OEM for its services in order to procure the best value for money and the most comprehensive maintenance of the car that we bought. It's not a very sophisticated analogy, but it's the best analogy I can think of to make the point that in making the decision then, SARS committed into a relationship with a particular number of service providers, one of which provides the service manager, which is the underlying platform on which SARS administers its entire body of tax products. Another service provider provides the interface between SARS and its taxpaying public, and a third service provider provides the interface between SARS and third-party partners. After my appointment, with the re-clarification of SARS strategy, included in that was the repositioning of the SARS IT strategy. We have in the past year concluded that, and we have made a strategic decision that SARS, due to its interdependency and interconnectedness, as I pointed out, with data and technology, effectively cannot always remain reliant on third-party providers for that service. That in fact, over time, we have to improve and build on our own capability to expand our IT and data science internal capability in order to continue the journey of bespoke a bespoke platform on which we administer our taxes. That journey we have substantively commenced, and what that means is that with the three key service providers, we have taken a decision because of risks, which we have applied our mind to, that one of them we have taken over with an agreement with the mother company that provided this service. It's our e-filing services in particular. We are building our own capability within Interfront, which is a company wholly owned by SARS, traditionally originally acquired to build our customs software and technology, to expand their scope to also now accommodate the competency to build our own e-signing services. So in the future, that services will no longer be insourced. It will be provided by ourselves through Interfront. Secondly, the second service provider that provides us with the interface between ourselves and third-party service providers and other agencies, that we are also bringing in-house. That particular contract runs out at the end of this year, and it will not be renewed. And then the last service provider, the company responsible for building our underlying service manager platform, that we will over time run down that level of services with that company, and it will be until we have replaced that system, which now is in fact a legacy system, we will replace that with a more modern service. The IT strategy that was conceived some 16 years ago, is no longer relevant. The world has moved on. Significantly additional innovations and technology options are provided. And in modernizing SARS, we will therefore, in a managed way, exit ourselves from all of these service providers that are currently in our MSA as we build our own capability. But understanding that SARS will always have relationships with service providers driven by certain business needs and certain business dynamics. So that is the longer-term strategy, just at a high-level chair. More detail of that we have shared with our colleagues in Treasury. The Minister has supported and approved the direction, and it is within that context that we are managing the providers within our current MSA until it is all retired. Let me pause there for now and hand back to you, Chair.
Okay, I heard the Deputy Minister earlier on saying that if there will be those officials from National Treasury who like to make comments, you can do so.
Chair, can I apologize before you, with your permission, respond to the questions that Honorable Abrams made?
Okay, proceed.
Thank you, sir. So just to say that on the funding issue, we leave the Deputy Minister and if our colleagues on Treasury are available to comment. On the deployment of women, I can give the committee the assurance that we are committed to invest in the growth of women, not only the gender-based violence issues, as we have mentioned, but also progressively advance the cause of women in our organization. At the moment, the women representative in management and leadership positions is at 49.91%. It is as near as you can get to 50-50. But and we will continue to work on that. The Women in Leadership Development Program is in fact to put a spotlight on that so that we can continually create opportunities for women in leadership. And so I just wanted to give the Honorable Madam Abrams the assurance that that is high up. I am personally focusing on that, which is also why we have appointed Ms. Mandisa Mbekeni to look at the program of women and gender sensitivities, as well as Ms. Nirala to look at the Women in Leadership program. So I can give the assurance that we will not rest until we have the appropriate level of equity? How are women appointed? Ultimately, in the same way that a man is appointed, whilst we want to transform our organization, we believe that every person, regardless of their orientation, must have the competence to do their work. Otherwise, you do them a disservice. You have heard in terms of people with disabilities, in her own voice, of Nadia van Niekerk experience as SARS. And again, it's not just about getting a particular percentage. It is about how people with disabilities find SARS as a home where they can be the best version of themselves and do not feel discriminated against by having a lesser enabled working environment. And I think no one could say it better than Ms. van Niekerk. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thanks. Any official from National Treasury would like to make a comment? I see Yanga is in the platform. I'm not sure whether there are other officials.
Morning, Chair. Thank you. From National Treasury, I think the Deputy Minister will be commenting. Thank you.
Okay, Yanga. Deputy Minister, will you want to make comments now or you want to make a closing, not necessarily concluding remarks before we close?
Can
take another round of questions, then the last round, then we move towards closure. Over to you.
Okay, perhaps we should do that. Yeah, maybe let me just answer two questions, which and some of them were comments, like the comment on the point that this one-to-one relationship between economic growth and tax revenue. I think we agree with that. And of course, the economy can grow, but it's also up to the ability of the state to, through SARS in particular, to receive and collect such revenue. And on the point raised by Honorable Abraham, Nokolo Abraham, particularly on the budget, I want to caution that we don't use this platform to undermine the budget process, because we all know that the budget starts with the priorities that the government articulates, and then we determine what is the fiscal envelope, and there's an MTEC in which departments and entities do the bidding. Mincom Budget sits, and it recommends to cabinet, and the matter comes before you as parliament processed by your committee. And it's at that point that we battle it out on whether we are appropriately funding our priorities, including the issue of SARS. So I would not want us to circumvent or come across as undermining that budget platform. So we should not use this platform to do, and I'm not saying that you are saying that, Honorable Abraham, that we should not be doing budget bidding for any entity, including the entity that I love so much, which is SARS, because without which we will not be able to generate revenue to do all the things that we've got to do. And I must say that based on your approval of the budget as well, we've allocated 3 billion over the period of 3 years to SARS. And of course, that comes against the background of a decline in the funding of SARS, but I do think that we should just be cautious that we don't undermine our own processes in the manner in which we do the budget. And I think the commissioner has responded on how we're dealing with the e-commerce. I just want to add one thing, which is small part, which is a bigger part of the how we tax the digital economy, Google, Amazon, and all that. And you honorable members will be aware that this is not just a South African issue. It's a global matter which requires all of us throughout the world to have some consensus in this regard. And we've said that we will not take unilateral measures as South Africa. We will wait, and we are working on the consensus-based solution. And through that work, in which we are participants in the G20, there is now consensus that we need to tax the digital economy. And we are at a point where colleagues and countries, through a collective effort in order to generate a consensus-based solution, we are working on the technicalities on how we basically do that. Because there are countries that took unilateral measures, France as an example, and there were retaliations, particularly from the US. And it has been agreed that the best way of dealing with the digital economy, in particular taxing of Google, Amazon, and other big companies that operate in this space, is important for us to have some kind of a consensus so that we, because all these companies are operational throughout the world, and you do need, therefore, a global approach in dealing with this issue, because South Africa, we can't act alone on this issue. We need to continue to work within this consensus framework. And I think the fact that this agreement now, it's just a question of working out the technicality on how we execute and implement this consensus. Thank you, Chair and colleagues. We are here to take more questions. If there are more questions, thank you so much.
Thanks, Deputy Minister. Honourable members, are there follow-up questions before we go to the last item? Honourable Bambu, over to you.
I don't understand this thing of every time we ask about the taxation framework for e-commerce, particularly, and then we are referred to OECD. We, the colonial outpost or something like that, like we have to wait for OECD to, because I'm sure there can be some approach that can be adopted in terms of what should happen if these multinational companies are generating revenue from the territory or the, within the borders of South Africa. Whichever way they're generating revenue, they must pay taxes like everyone else. Why should it be deferred to majority of the times even the culprits of these tax avoidance practices and who collaborate with that? They're possibly as beneficiaries of actionlessness in terms of what happened. Why is it being deferred then in terms of what happened? That is one. But two, can I be given a clearer framework of and timelines on the enforcing of the IT capacity in terms of what happens and what would be the transitional arrangement in terms of what happens. And then the specific question that we had asked was whether does the SARS think that the manner in which BBD is contracted to do work currently is compliant to the legislation of South Africa that deals with procurement and sourcing of third-party services. Can that be responded much more clearly so that we know how to assess this moving forward? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Shwambo. That looks like the only follow-up question. Over to you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. I think the question on OECD versus South Africa has been covered by the Deputy Minister when he said that unlike some countries, including some African countries, who have jumped ahead to break away from the OECD norms. South Africa has decided to be part of the international work stream. I'm not sure I can add any further value to that, except that we will continually update the committee on the progress against that work. On the issue of our IT service providers, we will respond specifically to the issues raised in the report by the public protector, but to the direct question as to whether we believe that the current relationship between all of the suppliers, in fact, not just the one that is pointed out, and SARS has been done in a regular manner within the framework that is provided for in terms of the PFMA regulations and other procurement frameworks. We clearly hold the view that SARS has followed every requirement and has worked with the Ministry and National Treasury and currently are functioning within an approved provision that has been authorized by National Treasury. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks. Is it a legacy hand or you haven't lowered your hand?
Or is it? Yeah, I think that's a little bit full up about that. That's a little bit different.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Shimambo. Dr. Masondo, Deputy Minister, can you make concluding remarks before I close the meeting?
No, not Councillor Chair. I think we once more appreciate the guidance, comments, and a critical feedback to what we are doing as the finance family as a whole, and in this instance, SARS. And we'll continue to come back to you for counsel, for guidance, for criticism, because we know that whatever criticism that you are leveling against us comes from the good heart, and that heart is a heart that seeks to serve South Africa better, because in the final analysis, all the work that we do is to change the living conditions of South Africans. And SARS, under the leadership of Commissioner Keith Wetter and his team, are indeed doing a sterling job to make sure that we do generate, receive the necessary revenue to continue to serve South African better. And thank you very much for this opportunity once more, Chair. We will come back again as and when you will need us to do so. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Deputy Minister and your team from National Treasury. Let me thank the members of SCOF. Thank the commissioner, officials from Parliament, including PBO and the entire team. Let me also acknowledge the continued improvement in the performance of SARS, and in this regard, thank National Treasury, which plays the executive oversight role on SARS. As you know, that SARS is not an entity of the National Treasury. It's an independent entity. With that as it may, the President has designated the Minister of Finance to play that oversight role. And we, as Parliament, play our oversight also on SARS. Then in that regard, thank the Commissioner, the entire SARS management and the team, and thank SARS officials, starting from the level of a lower or the office down there at the local level in Bizana, Giani, Njerere, or somewhere in Mvezo. Because most of the time we engage the commissioner and the executive. We hardly engage those who are there at the cold face, at the lowest level. Through this platform, it will be important that we acknowledge the good work that they are doing. Also, what I heard you, Commissioner, you are inviting us for, I'm not sure whether it's an IT system, but that is May, will come to Brooklyn. And honorable members, I think in the next quarter, we should do oversight in the busiest ports of entry. We are concerned as members of parliament on the continued inflow of counterfeit goods into the country. It's a very serious threat to the economy, and it is undermining the sovereignty of this country. So I will propose that we create space in the next quarter to visit the three busiest ports of entry, that is O.R. Tambo, we visit Bait Bridge, and the Durban Harbour, and see for ourselves as to how SARS and their colleagues go about administering those ports of entry in terms of customs. So Alan and Tebuko and the entire team, can you start to do work in that regard, that you work with the SARS office, that we visit those three busiest ports of entry. In conclusion, as we have already thanked everybody, including the Deputy Minister and the team, let me wish, I got reminded by the Commissioner, happiness on behalf of the SCOF. We wish happiness, success, and good health to our Muslim colleagues who are celebrating Eid Mubarak. Thanks very much. The meeting is adjourned. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you, team.